Good morning. Our anthem today is a piece where the words come from a poem by Rebecca Parker, who is the former president of Star King School for the Ministry. And so our opening words are the words that, from which were drawn, the anthem words. But I've broken it into three pieces because it's a rather long poem. So you're going to be hearing the first part as our opening words, the last part as our closing words, and the middle part at the end of the sermon. Your gifts, whatever you discover them to be, can be used to bless or curse the world. The mind's power, the strength of the hands, the reaches of the heart, the gift of speaking, listening, imagining, seeing, waiting. Any of these can serve to feed the hungry, bind up wounds, welcome the stranger, praise what is sacred, do the work of justice, or offer love. Any of these can draw down the prison door, hoard bread, abandon the poor, obscure what is holy, comply with injustice, or withhold love. You must answer this question: what will you do with your gifts? Choose to bless the world. Our story for all ages is an old folk tale told by Demi and will be acted out in pantomime by a couple members of our choir. And thank you for their help. Long ago, the emperor of an ancient land was old and dying. The emperor loved children but had none of her own, so she decided to choose one of the children of the land to be the next emperor. The emperor also loved plants, and of these she had many, so nobody was surprised by the test she offered the children of the land. The emperor called all the children to her palace, and she said, "I will give one seed and a small pot to each of you. Come back in a year, and when I see what you have grown from your seeds, I will choose the next emperor." And so she gave each child a seed and a small pot. The children ran from the palace smiling, and all they had to do was grow a seed, and they would be emperor. But a year is a long time. Most of the children decided to wait a little while to do their planting, and as the year went by, many children forgot their seeds. But one child, a boy named Chen, took care of his seed right away. Just like the emperor herself, Chen loved plants. Chen carefully carried the seed in the pot home and secured them in his hands so they wouldn't fall, but not so tightly that he would crush or break things. And when he got home, he found his grandfather and asked him for advice. His grandfather thought that the pot was just right for this seed and helped him to wash it and dry it carefully. And then next they found together some rich black soil, and it had many worms in it to make things nourishing, and Chen filled the pot with the soil, and then he planted his seed, carefully covering it with the soil. And then he set it in the sun. Each day he lightly sprinkled water on the seed, but nothing grew from the seed, nothing at all. Some weeks went by. The other children boasted to each other of the wonderful large plants they had grown, but Chen's seed did not grow. He tried moving the pot to another window. He tried watering the plant some more. He even tried singing to the plant. But no matter what Chen did, his seed did not grow. Then a year had passed. It was time to return to the emperor, and Chen was ashamed that his seed had not grown. But his wise grandfather said, "You did your best, Chen. You were caring and patient. Be honest with the emperor and explain that you did your best. It will be enough." So Chen returned to the palace with the empty pot held carefully in his arms. The children lined up to present their plants. The first child had a large plant with thick leaves, a ginseng plant that could be used to make paper and medicine. The next child had a eucalyptus plant, a healthy, strong plant that was soon to become a tree big enough to produce food for many animals. By the time Chen's turn came, he was so sad about his empty pot. Feeling very embarrassed, Chen held up his empty pot for the emperor to see. Chen explained how he had lovingly cared for his seed. He talked about his love for his grandfather, who had helped him care for it. He told the emperor everything he had done to care for the seed and how he felt sad that the seed would not grow. And the emperor smiled and spoke. "There is only one among you who is honest enough to be the emperor," she said. "The seeds that I gave you had been boiled, so they would never grow. These wonderful plants some children have shown me did not come from the seeds I gave them." Now, some of the other children looked ashamed, for they had not been honest, and the emperor knew it. "Only one child cared for the seed even when it did not grow," the emperor said. "Only Chen gave the seed all it needed and asked for nothing. Only Chen was honest enough to show me an empty pot. Chen will be the new emperor." And so Chen and his grandfather moved into the emperor's palace, and the emperor taught him many things about gardening and much more. And when the emperor died, she was smiling because she knew that Chen would care for his land with love and with honesty. Thank you to our players. Now is a time for personal prayer or meditation, and to lead us into that time of silence and personal thought are these words from Parker Palmer, the spiritual writer, from his book, A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Towards an Undivided Life. "Every summer, I go to the Boundary Waters, a million acres of pristine wilderness along the Minnesota-Ontario border. My first trip years ago was a vacation, pure and simple. But as I returned time and again to that elemental world of water, rock, woods, and sky, my vacation began to feel more like a pilgrimage to me, an annual trek to holy ground driven by spiritual need. Douglas Wood's Meditation on the Jack Pine, a tree native to that part of the world, names what I go up north seeking, images of how life looks when it is lived with integrity. Thomas Merton claimed that there is in all things a hidden wholeness, but back in the human world, where we are less self-revealing than jack pines, Merton's words can at times sound like wishful thinking. Afraid that our inner light will be extinguished or our inner darkness exposed, we hide our true identities from each other. In this process, we become separated from our own souls. We end up living divided lives, so far removed from the truth that we hold within that we cannot know the integrity that comes from being where you are. My knowledge of the divided life comes first from personal experience. I yearn to be whole, but a divided life often seems the easier choice. A still, small voice speaks the truth to me about my work or the world or myself. I hear it and yet act as if I did not. I withhold a personal gift that might serve a good end or commit myself to a project I do not really believe in. I keep silent when I should address or actively break faith with my own convictions. I deny my inner darkness, giving it more power over me, or I project onto other people, creating enemies where none exist. I pay a steep price when I live a life, a divided life, feeling fraudulent, anxious of being found out, and depressed about the fact that I'm denying my own selfhood. But up north, in the wilderness, I sense the wholeness hidden in all things. In it is a taste of wild berries, the scent of unbaked pine, the sight of the northern lights, the sound of water lapping the shores, sign of a bedrock integrity that is eternal and beyond all doubt. And when I return to a human world that is transient and riddled with disbelief, I have new eyes for the wholeness hidden in me and my kind, and a new heart for loving even our imperfections. Our reading is from Anne Lamott's book, Hallelujah Anyway, Rediscovering Mercy. She writes, Rilke wrote, I want to unfold. I don't want to stay folded anywhere, because where I am folded, there I am a lie. End quote. We got folded by trying as hard as we could to make everyone happy, to please everyone, and to fill every moment with productivity. Our grown-ups said this would bring approval, and approval would bring satisfaction, and they would like us more. But we also learned to sabotage ourselves so they wouldn't feel eclipsed. High achievement made the family look good, but also seemed to be another nail in Dad's coffin. We agreed to get folded at school and in jobs, to get ahead, shine the family star, fill our Swiss cheese holes. We got folded and fooled into airless states of accomplishment, estrangement from ourselves, squandering our very short lives. Then we folded ourselves so we wouldn't annoy or embarrass our kids. Self-importance fueled by performance anxiety, people-pleasing, sloth, and bad self-esteem wrapped us into small, crisp squares like professionally laundered shirts. I was there this week. I liked it briefly because folded feels like home, small, familiar, hugged. I like smells of soap and steam and starch. Then it becomes oppressive and disorienting. Even a lot of caffeine and cheery new curtains don't help. You see, we got creased in those places such a long time ago that it seems hopeless to begin the great unfolding now. Our integrity got broken. I am not sure we got strong at the broken places, although people love to say that that happens. Thus ends the reading. Hermann Hesse, the Swedish author of Siddhartha, once said, You are only afraid if you are not in harmony with yourself. People are afraid because they have never owned up to themselves. My premise today is that he is right, that the result of a lack of integrity is of not being in harmony with yourself is fear. When we are in fear, we fold in, we hide, we live divided, we distort reality. Our national leaders often drive our country from fear. Policies around immigration and the rhetoric of building a wall are based on fear. But that's not the only example. We see lots of fear-mongering in our society, and it drives on a lack of integrity. This isn't anything new. Think about the Salem witch trials, or at least think about the Arthur Miller play, The Crucible, based on them. In it, we have a situation arise where the young girl, Abigail, begins to accuse other people of being witches. Presumably, she knows that they are not. And yet, or she has no reason to think so, at least, and she's acting without integrity. And, out of fear, others join her in that lie, accusing others lest they be accused themselves. Another example, a more modern example of living without integrity out of fear, comes from a series of politicians and preachers in our society, those who have chosen to lash out with anger and hateful rhetoric for fear of being exposed themselves. There are numerous instances in our society when we have found out that some of our public figures, preachers and politicians with the strongest anti-gay rhetoric, turn out to have themselves been living a lie, living in fear, living in ways not in harmony with the way they truly are. It sometimes seems that the more strong the anti-gay rhetoric, the more likely it will be that that politician or preacher is found out to have been living a lie and is secretly gay themselves. For example, Republican U.S. Representative David Dreyer, who voted against marriage rights and gay adoption rights and LGBT civil rights, has been repeatedly been accused and suspected of being gay. Larry Craig, an Idaho Republican senator, was arrested for propositioning a male undercover police officer in 2007. This was also true of Robert Allen, a Florida Republican representative, and the list goes on and on. Or take, for example, Alan Chambers, former president of the former ex-gay organization Exodus International, who finally admitted that the program didn't work and he was still gay. Parker Palmer, the spiritual writer, gives several examples that are less severe, perhaps, about how we can live divided lives. We live divided lives, he says, when, first, we refuse to invest ourselves in our work, diminishing its quality and distancing ourselves from those it is meant to serve. Second, when we make our living at jobs that violate our basic values, even when our survival does not absolutely demand it. Third, when we remain in settings or relationships that steadily kill off our spirit, when we harbor secrets to achieve personal gain at the expense of other people. Fourth, when we hide our beliefs from those who disagree with us to avoid conflict, avoid challenge, avoid change. And lastly, we conceal our true identities for fear of being criticized, shunned, or attacked. Martin Luther King Jr. had this to say about the subject. On some questions, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it polite? And vanity comes along and asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when we must take a position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular, but we must do it because conscience tells us it is right. Let me share a story I think resonates from NPR's This I Believe series. On one of their programs, a man shared this story. Back in the early 1980s, he wrote, I was in a training session for mental health workers who were volunteering to provide counseling to cancer patients who had a terminal diagnosis. Each of us was given 16 index cards and asked to write on each the names of people, abilities, things, and values that we hold dear. In the course of our imagined cancer, we had to surrender cards or somewhat abruptly have them taken from us. At the end of the exercise, I had two cards left. One read integrity, and the other read my family. How could I choose between these two? My initial thought was that I would give up my integrity because I love my daughters and would want their comfort at my death. But then I would realize that dying without integrity might be worse. The story ends there with the impossible dilemma. Integrity is often very difficult. It means sometimes making the difficult choice. Sometimes people to live a life of integrity come out of the closet knowing it's going to mean separation from their family and from their friends. Sometimes from their religion or their faith. Sometimes people come out into their own integrity in other ways in their lives and knowing that they're risking job or home or health. Integrity means, though, not being afraid to be your whole self, even if it is not politic, even if it is not popular, and even if it is not safe. For some right now, integrity means standing up and proclaiming Black Lives Matter. For some right now, integrity is about stepping out of a job that they don't believe in into an unknown and uncertain future. Anytime you do something that you feel you must absolutely do, even though you're afraid to do it, you know you're facing an issue of integrity. I think it was this way for Pastor Ryan Bell, a minister of an evangelical Seventh-day Adventist church, who realized that his faith was slipping. He made the announcement he was going to spend a year without God. since God is either there or not, and anything, he can't do anything about that fact. What he meant was that he was spending a year immersing himself in atheist circles and atheist thought and forsaking a regular prayer life. He talked about it back in December of 2013, saying, "As it turns out, the day came when I didn't really fit in the church anymore. I had been an outspoken critic of the church's approach to our gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered members, that approach being exclusion or at the best second-class membership. Through the years, I had also been a critic of the church's treatment of women, their approach to evangelism, and their tunnel-visioned approach to church growth. I was deeply committed to my community and its betterment, something that won me the praise of some and the vitriol of others. I engaged in and sponsored interfaith relationships within my church and in the community." So why would an evangelical minister do this? Because he felt that he had to have integrity. And at the end of the year, he made it official. He was an atheist. He really didn't believe in God any longer. And it cost him a lot. Actually, he would probably make a good Unitarian Universalist because he still believes in religious community and believes it can do a lot of good, and he doesn't like the strident and inflammatory tone that some atheist groups can take. Maybe you can relate to the journey he's been on. I think that integrity, as it turns out, having that balance, doing what is right, whether or not it is safe and popular, is incredibly important to a lot of UUs. For example, Unitarian Universalists are often those who left other churches. How many of you came out of a different faith than Unitarian Universalism? At least half, I would say. And I have a secret for you. Lots of people in other churches also don't believe what those churches teach either. The Catholic Church is full of people who think that the supposedly infallible teachings of the church are flat out wrong, and they practice birth control, or they think women should be ordained, or they have abortions, or they believe in and vote for the death penalty despite the church's teachings against it. I've done several weddings for Catholic couples who continue to want to be Catholic and attend Catholic church, but can't get married in that church because the church won't recognize their wedding, but yet they want to be married anyway, despite what their church teaches. And they want to continue to be Catholic. This is true for a lot of other denominations as well. There are lots of atheists sitting in the pews of Christian churches. But you folk, you who came to this church from another church, you're different. You're people who can't live like that, who have to have the harmony between belief and action, who have to read ahead in the responsive readings and see if you agree with the words before you put them in your mouth. Other people have different values than this sometimes. They value stronger tradition, family, even a building or location can be a stronger value than that question of integrity in an alignment between what I'm saying and what I'm doing. But for our come-outer UUs, as we sometimes call them, as opposed to our homegrown UUs, like myself and the many of the rest of you, for them, this trait of integrity, I think, is particularly strong. I began about talking about integrity as the opposite of fear, but instead of not just defining what it's not, let's talk about what it is, which is harmony, or integration, or wholeness, to alignment. To have all your integrity is to be integrated, to bring all together your parts and cohesion, to not leave any part of yourself at the door. And at this church, we don't ask you to leave any part of yourself at the door. If your lack of integrity is connected to fear, your having integrity is connected to wholeness, to authenticity, to living that unfolded life, to use Anne Lamott's words, or an undivided life, to use Parker Palmer's. So how do we live this undivided, unfolded life? One way is through engaging in spiritual practice, particularly practices of solitude and silence, finding a way to listen to that inner voice, to that still small voice within. As Emerson wrote, "Trust thyself. Every heart vibrates to that iron string," right? Parker Palmer calls it the search for the soul, saying Thomas Merton called it the true self. Buddhists call it the original nature or the big self. Quakers call it the inner teacher or inner light. Hasidic Jews call it a spark of the divine. Humanists call it identity and integrity. In popular parlance, he says, people often call it soul. Another way to live the undivided, unfolded life is community. Again, Parker Palmer's words saying, the path is too deeply hidden to be traveled without company. Finding our way involves clues that are subtle and sometimes misleading, requiring the kind of discernment that can only happen in dialogue. The destination is too daunting to be achieved alone. We need community to find the courage to venture into the alien lands to which the inner teacher may call us. Of course, not just any community enables us to live in integrity. Some churches and some faiths require that you live divided, and some just don't address it at all. Your bridge group or country club or bowling group generally might not do it at all. Much as, you know, you may love bridge or bowling or country clubs. The community needs to be one, and sometimes they do it, right? Because the community needs to be one that's grounded in values. So if it begins with values, then you're on a path to a community that can teach you integrity. It needs to be one that works from a place of love rather than fear. It's best if your community is one that welcomes you and accepts your full, authentic self and encourages you to live your life rather than live a lie. And it encourages you to live openly rather than secretly, hidden and folded. So instead of folding the self, let me give you another image. Another way is to become a Mobius strip. Many of us separate our inner and outer lives. We live like a paper circle, a ring, hopefully not a folded one, but where what is on the outside is what everyone sees and what's on the inside is what they don't. But if you open that circle and you twist it and you put it back together again, you get the Mobius strip, where the inside and the outside are one continuous loop, and that's spiritual integration. And it's hard. It may be impossible. There are always some things we're going to keep secret. Having integrity in this culture of death, this culture of violence, is particularly hard. How can we have integrity of self and at the same time disconnect completely from this culture of fear? That answer is actually, we can't. We have to stay connected to and focused on the unfolding in our culture to have integrity. We have to balance the isolation and the connectedness, the solitude and the group, the fear and the love, the folding and the Mobius strip. And so that's what we embrace here. We're not perfect, but we try to be a place where you have the ability to bring your whole self to this worshiping body, this community of souls. We embrace the idea that you can share your disagreements, your doubts, and if you put two Unitarians in the room, you're going to have three opinions, right? That's okay. That's good. We welcome it. So you can have disagreements. You can disagree with everything I say up here. And you can bring also your joys and your triumphs and your excitements and, yes, your fear and your troubles. And may this be your house of integrity. May each of you find a place here where your whole selves, beautiful and broken, friendly and lovable and quarrelsome, your whole selves are embraced. I close with the next portion of Rebecca Parker's Choose to Bless the World. The choice to bless the world is more than an act of will, a moving forward into the world with the intention to do good. It is an act of recognition, a confession of surprise, a grateful acknowledgement that in the midst of a broken world, unspeakable beauty, grace, and mystery abide. There is an embrace of kindness that encompasses all life, even yours. And while there is injustice, anathematization, or evil, there moves a holy disturbance, a benevolent rage, a revolutionary love, protesting, urging, insisting that that which is sacred will not be defiled. Those who bless the world live their life as a gesture of thanks for this beauty and for this rage. May it be so.